From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis.
And I'm Peter Sagal. You always suspected it was true that somewhere in Washington, some bureaucrat had it in for you and was going to make your life miserable. And everybody said you were crazy. Well, you are crazy, but it doesn't mean you weren't right. We'll ask you who really is out to get you, plus Bill Curtis, legendary anchorman and famed voiceover guy, reacts to the prestige associated with working in public radio.
Let me tell you this, I don't give a bleep.
We'll ask you who really wasn't impressed and by what on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A senior White House advisor says President Obama didn't learn about the improper IRS scrutiny of Tea Party groups until the investigation was nearly over. Speaking on Fox News Sunday, Obama advisor Dan Pfeiffer says the White House was not in the loop on the IRS Inspector General's investigation.
The first time, as we've said, that anyone heard about this at the White House was when the counsel's office at the Treasury Department called the counsel's office at the White House a few weeks ago and to let us know that there was an investigation that was coming to a conclusion. We didn't know the details of it. We didn't see the report. So we had no facts at that point, just that such an investigation was coming to a conclusion.
But Republicans aren't buying that. Speaking on ABC's This Week, Ohio Congressman Rob Portman says a special counsel could be necessary to find out what really happened.
I just find it very hard to believe that lower-level employees here in Cincinnati, Ohio, took this on themselves, and that it went on for a couple years without anybody knowing about it.
The White House says the IRS is in the middle of a month-long review of the matter, although Republicans say that review won't go far enough. The U.S. will reach the debt ceiling limit today. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports the U.S. Treasury, on Friday, began using extraordinary measures to keep the country from defaulting on its obligations.
The debt ceiling today will automatically reset to a higher level, reflecting the amount that was borrowed since lawmakers suspended the nation's legal borrowing limit at $16.3 trillion in February. The Obama administration on Friday told Congress that it's prepared to take a series of steps to free up an estimated $260 billion so it can keep paying the nation's bills. The Treasury Department says those steps will allow the government to avoid defaulting on any of its obligations until after the September 2nd Labor Day holiday. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
North Korea has carried out its fourth short-range missile test in 2 days. The BBC's Lucy Williamson reports it comes as the UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, urged Pyongyang to refrain from further testing.
Mr. Ban called the launches provocative and said he was very worried. Speaking to Russia's state news agency, he called on North Korea to stop any further such actions and return to talks. North Korea routinely test fires short-range missiles off its eastern coast, and they're seen to pose a much smaller threat than the intermediate-range missiles apparently prepared for launch several weeks ago. But the latest test firings come after weeks of high tension over the past few months, during which Pyongyang threatened nuclear strikes against the United States.
The BBC's Lucy Williamson. A Bangladeshi court blocked the owner of a garment factory destroyed in a fire last November from leaving the country. Delwar Hossein owned Tarzin Fashion. The building burned last year, killing 112 people inside. A more recent accident, more than 1,100 people were killed when a building collapsed in Bangladesh. This is NPR. Federal investigators say they'll take several days to look into the possible cause of Friday's commuter train crash outside Bridgeport, Connecticut. That's on the nation's second largest train line. Officials are looking into a broken section of rail to see if that had anything to do with a crash that injured dozens of people. State and local authorities are warning commuters that train traffic is still suspended in part of the region. Monday morning's commute to work will be difficult. They're urging people to make alternative travel plans. Denmark is the winner of Europe's biggest song contest, watched by an estimated 125 million television viewers. Terry Schultz reports on the ever-popular Eurovision competition that saw 26 nations' performers pitted against each other for the glitzy title.
Eurovision has launched the careers of stars including Celine Dion and Julio Iglesias. ABBA's Waterloo won the contest in 1974. Last night's competition was back in ABBA's homeland, since Swedish singer Loreen won last year. In 2014, it will move just next door.
The winner of the 58th Eurovision Song Contest, Emily DeForest.
The 20-year-old DeForest says she's the happiest girl in the world.
Of course, I believed in the song and I thought we had a great song, but it was so close. So I was very surprised and shocked when it happened.
Azerbaijan took second and Ukraine was third. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz.
Reports from Nepal say at least 64 people have now successfully climbed to the top of Mount Everest, among them the first Saudi Arabian woman to scale the world's tallest peak. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Subaru, sponsor of NPR's Backseat Book Club. Learn more about this month's book selection at npr.org/backseat.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. We got Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Alice Cooper. He'll be playing our game later. But first, we learned this week that the number one country song in America right now, called I Drive Your Truck, was inspired by an NPR story. This is true. And we further found out that it's not the first country song inspired by an NPR story. You may remember these.
I'm proud to be a coal miner's daughter, but let's also look for alternative energy issues. I've got friends in affluent urban places.
It's time to hear you sing. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name's Andrew Shackett. I'm from White Bear Lake, Minnesota, but currently living in South Minneapolis.
Oh, South Minneapolis. That sounds nice. So, Andrew, what do you do for a living?
I run a restaurant.
And is that a good business these days?
It is. We have a focus on craft beer, so I get a lot of free craft beer samples.
You're saying craft, right?
Yes.
The ones who make the Velveeta?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, welcome to the show, Andrew. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian and director whose new movie is called Willow Creek. It's Bobcat Goldthwait. Next, the senior editor and columnist for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor. Finally, a blogger for CarTalk.com and the newest member of the Clio Advertising Hall of Fame. There is a Clio Advertising Hall of Fame, Mr. Tom Beaudette.
Hey, Andrew.
Andrew, welcome to the show. Let's get started with Who's Bill This Time? Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle. We'll recreate for you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you win the big prize. Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
Now, your first quote comes from a woman named Lois Lerner, who was a former director at the IRS.
I'm not good at math.
Which might be a problem at the IRS. In fact, it might have got her in trouble because she was one of the officials who got caught doing what?
That would be focusing on Tea Party applications.
Right. Exactly right. Targeting conservatives. Very good. Yes. I don't know about you guys, but when I thought of government agencies that might turn out to be a villain, I never suspected the IRS. Now, the way it works is it is the IRS's job to approve applications for tax-exempt status for social welfare groups that are usually political organizations. Now, we've learned the IRS was giving extra scrutiny to the conservative applicants, especially ones with words like Tea Party and Patriot in their names, because you got to watch out for those patriots.
I don't think anybody should be singled out, but if you complain about high taxes a lot,
yeah,
I think the IRS is going to put the screws to you.
Yeah.
There's too much taxes. Who should we audit?
This is a true story. There was a conservative group called Media Trackers, right? And they were just couldn't get anything going with the IRS. It was constantly being delayed for months and months and months. So the guy in charge of it submitted a new application under the name Greenhouse Solutions and got approved in 3 weeks. True story. If the key to getting the IRS to be nice to you is having a liberal-sounding name, this could work for individuals, right? So, you know, just go to the IRS, put down your tax return, and say, yes, my name is Pro-Choice Johnson.
I just use Ed Begley.
That'll work, yeah. All right, very good, Andrew. Here is your next quote.
The name is Blonde. James Blonde.
That was London's Daily Mail newspaper, Andrew, talking about a man who was caught allegedly doing what while wearing a blonde wig in Russia.
Oh, the American spy that they caught. He was
yes.
trying to recruit spies.
Indeed. Move over, James Bond. Make way for Ryan Fogel. Or as he likes to say, the name's Fogel. Ryan... Oh, what was the second part? So this guy was caught by the Russian police going out to recruit a Russian informant. To do this, he wore a, quote, shaggy blonde wig, brought another such wig. He also brought a compass and an atlas of Moscow. He needed the atlas, presumably, to find his way to the rendezvous, and he needed the compass to find his own ass.
Was this our A-team that we sent, this guy?
I think he just, it's like an intern that just went rogue. You know?
Yeah.
God, I'm in Moscow, all they ever ask me to do is get coffee. It's like,
I got this idea.
Did you see the video of his takedown?
Yeah, the Russian police just sort of swarming on him?
Yeah, yeah, but it's much funnier if you watch it with Yakety Sax playing.
Well, maybe this is what it is. You know, that last Bond movie, Skyfall, was all about going low-tech, that the high-tech stuff was not working. He went old school and won the day, and the CIA learned. That's it. We'll go back to the atlases, untraceable. The compasses, untraceable.
But they caught him when his shoe rang.
All right, your last quote comes from Whoopi Goldberg with some touching words for one of her colleagues at The View who announced her retirement this week.
Let me tell you this. I don't give a bleep.
That charming send-off was directed at what legendary journalist?
Barbara Walters.
Yes, indeed, Barbara Walters. Many decades ago, when she began her career, Ms. Walters was just another woman reporter reduced to doing silly celebrity stories. But through hard work, she became one of the most powerful and influential reporters of her era, which then allowed her to become the preeminent woman doing silly celebrity stories. During her career, she interviewed everyone, including infamous villains like Fidel Castro and Mel Gibson, not to mention Hillary Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, and many other people who had sex with Bill Clinton.
So now, are we never going to learn what kind of tree Barbara Walters would be?
Well, that's it. I mean, because that was her thing. She'd always interview these celebrities, and she was famous for getting these celebrities to cry, right? Mm-hmm. And for that, she credited her tenacious interviewing style and her producer a freshly chopped bag of onions.
And her rabbit punch.
Yeah, she just whack them really hard.
Right in the kidney.
Yeah. Ms. Walters says she will spend her retirement making her grandchildren cry. Bill, how did Andrew do in our quiz?
Well, he did pretty well. I think he did perfect.
There he is. Congratulations, Andrew.
Well, thank you very much.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Bobcat, the UN is trying to figure out the problem of feeding an exploding global population, but they have come up with a solution. They say people should eat what?
Children?
That would solve a problem. I'll give you a hint. There are 7 billion people on the planet, but there are even more of these things.
Oh, no. Are you saying cats?
Not saying...
I don't want people eating cats. Are they an animal?
They are a kind of animal. They're in the animal kingdom.
And we should eat them, and there's a lot of them.
There's an awful lot of them. Awful. Although you have to eat a lot of them to fill up because they're small.
Pigeons?
No, smaller.
Rats?
Smaller.
Smaller than a rat.
Sort of bottom of the food chain.
Oh, a little rat. A little tiny rat. It's like you have them with... You have them with buffalo sauce.
Yeah, that's great. You dip them by the tail, Bobcat.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
tasty.
Yeah. No. Insects?
Insects! Bugs!
Insects.
Yes!
Well played.
Thank you. According to the UN, insects are, quote, healthy and nutritious, not to mention crunchy alternatives to your basic staples like chicken, pork, beef, and whatever a McRib is made of. Also, it is worth considering this for people who are skeptical. With bugs, you generally get 4 more drumsticks than you do with a chicken.
Wow.
Tom, Botox is strange, injecting your face with poisons. Plastic surgery is expensive. Not to worry, though. More and more people are turning to what to keep their faces looking inappropriately young?
Oh, wow. Well, it can't be the obvious, sort of like creams and things. Inversion? Like they're...
Not quite.
Upside down?
I'll give you a hint. You're going to want to start with downward-facing nostril.
Oh, I read this. It's facial yoga.
Face yoga, yes!
I love...
They're doing face yoga. Friends star Jennifer Aniston and notorious rapper and felon Gwyneth Paltrow are just 2 of the celebrities turning to face yoga. There are 18 poses which move around the muscles of your face, including the owl, pufferfish, and hamster cheeks. Lululemon has already started selling tiny see-through yoga pants for your face.
I'm not in the best shape, so I would probably, if it catches on, need a shirt that says, "This is not face yoga, I'm having a stroke."
Coming up, it's a bad, bad behavior. Bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. Carbonite, automatic and encrypted cloud backup solutions that provide access to backed up files from any device. Carbonite.com and eSurance, an Allstate company, with an app that lets users manage their policies, update payment info, and handle claims. At eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kasell. We're playing this week with Bobcat Goldthwait, Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Beaudet. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matt Bezark from the foothills above Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, I love Boulder. What do you do there?
I write iPhone apps and teach people how to write iPhone apps and make artwork out of glass.
You teach people
wow.
how to make iPhone apps and make art with glass?
So how much are your bongs?
It's Boulder.
He's making stuff out of glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get it.
Matt, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Matt's topic?
Introducing the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Worst Person of the Year.
Of all the terrible people we encounter at work or at home with our families, once in a while someone goes above and beyond. Our panelists are going to tell you about some champions of behaving badly. Guess the real one and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. First up, let's hear from Bobcat Goldthwait.
What do you get the family that has everything? Their own disabled person so they can cut lines at Disney World. Satan himself has been working around the clock building a new wing in hell to accommodate the wealthy Manhattanite moms who have figured out the way to get in front of the line in the Magic Kingdom is by hiring a disabled person to pose as a family member so they can get their disgusting children to the front of the line. My daughter waited 1 minute to get on It's a Small World. The other kids had to wait 2.5 hours, crowed one mom who had hired a disabled guide through Dream Tours Florida. You can't go to Disney without a tour concierge, she sniffed. This is how the 1% does it.
People renting disabled family members or fake family members so they can cut to the front of the line at Disney World. Your next story of somebody scraping the bottom comes from Kerry O'Connor.
Lauren Stanley didn't think of herself as a bad person. She was a nurse and a mother of two and founding member of the Cabot, Vermont Heirloom Seed Exchange. She just didn't want to blow a precious day off chaperoning 22 kindergartners on a field trip to watch maple syrup being made. The thought of riding on that school bus, the screams, the singing of Miss Mary Mack, gave her a preemptive migraine. But the rules of chaperoning were pretty strict, and her number was up. Then, about a week before the trip, she had an idea. She could get the trip canceled. On her shift at the walk-in clinic, she began collecting used Kleenexes. Nothing bad, really, just from patients with the common cold. The next day, she sneaked into the schoolroom early and gave the room, the guinea pig cage, the cubbies, the crayons, a good rub-down with the infected tissues. Sure enough, within a couple of days, five-year-olds were dropping like flies. The parents were pretty flummoxed. Then little Caleb Stanley told his teacher a long, rambling story about mommy's special bag of germs. And the whole plot came unraveled.
A woman gets an entire kindergarten class sick so as to avoid having to take them on a field trip. Your last story of someone who's the best at being the worst comes from Tom Beaudet.
Liam Crow had it all. Loving wife, two beautiful kids, house, and a camper in the driveway. But after being caught cheating with another woman, Crow is now living in that camper in a Sam's Club parking lot where he operates Extra Fair Management, a discreet service for people engaged in extramarital affairs who, as his brochure states, really care about their wives and kids. I want to spare other families the pain my loved ones had to experience. I learned from my mistakes and I want to share what I know with the world. Helping other people not get caught is my way of giving back. Crow will act as a scheduling liaison to keep incriminating numbers off of cell phones. He'll arrange locations to meet, provide wake-up calls. He'll even call at dinner time and act like a weepy drunk friend who needs a man hug or a pesky coworker with a sofa to move. Wives today are too darn smart, said Crow. The old I'm hiking the Appalachian Trail story isn't going to cut it with these gals. So if you truly loved your family, you'd call Extra Fair.
Okay. Here are your choices. Now, one of these people or groups of people really exists. From Bobcat Goldthwait, Manhattan moms wealthy enough to hire disabled people so their kids don't have to wait in line at Disney World. From Kerry O'Connor, a school mother who decided she really didn't want to take that field trip, so infected the entire class. or from Tom Baudet, a guy who has set up a business to do everything he can to make sure that you won't get caught cheating on your wife like he was caught cheating on his? Which of these are the real story of somebody in the week's news?
I think I'm going to go with the last one.
You're going to go with Tom's story of the guy who's out there trying to make sure that you, unlike him, don't get caught in having your affair.
Yes.
Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to the woman who uncovered that real story.
Hiring a black market handicapped Disney guide allows you more or less immediate access to every ride and attraction.
That was anthropologist Wednesday Martin. That is her name. She learned about the black market tours while researching her book, The Primates of Park Avenue. Congratulations, Matt.
Just feel the entire nation cringe?
I know. I'm sorry about two things. I'm sorry that you didn't win, and I'm sorry that those people actually exist.
Me too.
Which is terrifying. Unfortunately, as you now know, Bobcat had the real story. Tom's, though, I think is a business idea that somebody out there is going to take up soon. So.
But take heart. I made that up.
That's true.
This world one doesn't exist yet.
Yet. Thank you so much for playing, Matt.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. And I feel like crying.
And now the game where somebody who's done something great does something unimportant. It's called Not My Job. Think about heavy metal rock and roll. The costumes, the makeup, the outfits, the stage shows filled with effects and pyrotechnics. Pretty much all of that was invented, or at least perfected, by Alice Cooper. If it wasn't for him, bands like Slayer and Megadeth would be playing love songs in identical suits and bowl haircuts. Alice Cooper, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I do want to get this story, particularly for our younger listeners. You started as sort of a more traditional rock and roll player, right?
Well, you know, like every other band in the 60s, we learned how to play Beatles songs and Rolling Stones songs. I mean, that was all rock and roll 101. And then we just, you know, when we heard the Yardbirds and the Who, then we started stretching out and learning those songs. Added a little bit of Dracula in there and some West Side Story, and, you know, as long as we could get parents to hate us, we were just fine.
Really? So how did the whole Alice Cooper thing start? It wasn't your first band, and Alice Cooper was actually at first the name of the band?
Yeah, well, actually, the idea was, I just said we need a definitive villain in rock and roll, and that's got to be Alice Cooper, and I was more than happy to play that part. But in order to do that, you have to don't just play hit records. You have to have the image, you have to have the show built around it, and you have to pretty much annoy every parent organization in America.
Yeah.
But, to put it in perspective, here was the Summer of Love, and it was like, you know, all this la-la-la music. And these artists were really popular, but they were, you know, good-looking guys and good-looking gals, and the outcasts, the weirdos, the my people had nothing to relate to. And then Alice Cooper comes out, and he's in a dress, and he's got makeup on, and he's screaming his heart out. And, you know, it was like a star-belly sneech finding the rest of the star-belly sneeches.
Yeah.
You know? He was the hero of the outcasts, the weirdos, the losers. So
there was the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, you know, 90%. I was glad to take the outcast 10%.
Sure.
It ended up that the outcast 10% was a lot more people than people realized.
And when did you start dying at the end of your shows?
Well, we figured that if you are a villain, I don't care if it's Shakespeare or Vampire Diaries, the bad guy needs to get it in the end.
Yeah.
You know, and we felt that Alice is playing the villain through the whole show. And there's baby parts flying and, you know, things. So that character needs to be punished.
I'm sorry, back up. Baby parts flying?
Well, sure.
You know, it wasn't really baby parts. It was doll parts.
Sure.
You know, but of course the audience, there was no internet then, so everything was word of mouth. And by the time it got back to mom and dad, they were live babies.
Yeah.
You
know?
But in his defense, that baby was a jerk.
One of the most famous stories about you from pretty much when you started was that you once bit the head off a chicken on stage, or a live chicken.
You know, and that was one of the great moments where I'm on stage. We went on between John Lennon and Yoko and the Doors, and 60,000 people at the Toronto Peace and Love.
Sure, of course. No better place to bite a head off a live chicken, but
right,
go on.
Well, you know, we had to bring some drama to it. And we're doing the very last song. we open up these pillows, these white pillows with CO2 cartridges, and two pillows will fill Madison Square Garden. It looks like a snowstorm up there.
Right.
I look down, and there's a white chicken on the stage. Now, I didn't bring the chicken, and nobody I know on stage brought it, but there he was. I'm from Detroit, okay? I've never been on a farm in my life. It had wings. It had feathers. It should fly. So I kind of tossed it into the audience, figuring somebody would take it home as a souvenir. And chickens don't fly as much as they plummet.
Yes.
And this is the Peace and Love Festival. Next day on the, in the press, Alice Cooper kills chicken and drinks blood. Frank Zappa called me up. He was producing us at the time, and he says, "Did you kill a chicken on stage last night?" And I went, "No." And he says, "Well, don't tell anybody. They love it."
I want to ask you about one more incredibly terrifying thing that Alice Cooper did. Was you once appeared on Hollywood Squares?
Yes.
You really?
Know, I figured that I would put Alice every place he didn't belong.
Right.
You know. And so to do the Hollywood Squares next to Paul Lynde, I thought was a Medal of Honor.
Oh, absolutely.
I got fired from the Hollywood Squares.
Did you really?
Yeah, because no one would pick me. And even when you needed me to win, and the guy's like, Judd Nelson? And I go, "It's tic-tac-toe, you jackass." I'm skipping all over the place. You recently covered Lady Gaga.
Yes, well, we figured we did the Bonnaroo Festival. Bonnaroo is sort of like, it's like a Boy Scout outing. You know, it's not like Woodstock or anything that was just kind of like filthy and hippie and the whole thing like that. This is more like everybody's cleaning up afterwards, you know, and they're putting everything in green bags and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, very orderly.
We didn't fit in there at all. And, you know, the idea of Alice Cooper playing in this sort of, you know, arena was, we were definitely the bad guys. And I said, well, let's throw them at least a song that they know. You know, let's throw them Born This Way. Then we had a giant 14-foot Alice Cooper came out dressed like Gaga. You know,
sure. You must have had to pay for a lot of meat to dress a 14-foot.
Well, you know, I told Gaga that she missed the boat on that one. I said, you didn't take that far enough. If it would have been my show at the end, they would have put her on a spit and barbecued her. And then the audience come up and just eat the dress.
There you go. That's why you're a founding genius of rock and roll in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Now, how did you become friends with Salvador Dali?
Well, now, everybody had an interpretation of our show. You know, Groucho Marx used to come to the show and said, Alice is the last hope for vaudeville.
Right.
Because he saw it as vaudeville. Salvador Dali saw it as surrealism. He saw it as sort of like one of his paintings coming to life. And I did get to work with him on a project that where he built a thing called Alice Cooper's Brain. And it's like made out of, you know, ceramic and everything. It had a chocolate eclair running down the back. And ants crawling all over it that spelled out Alice and Dali. And he says, this is the Alice brain. You know, and I said, well, can I have it? And he goes, of course not. It's worth millions.
Well, Alice Cooper, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling.
So what if you had bit the head off that chicken?
Oh, great. I love it.
We know, we're willing to believe that you didn't really bite the head off that chicken, like you said. But if you had bit the head off that chicken, it might have gone on to fame and fortune, just like Mike the Headless Chicken did back in the 1940s. We're going to ask you three questions about the real, true story of Mike the